Phil, there are so many great television shows and movies.
That's right. Thank goodness Resonance Rewind has the team to analyze them on a personal basis.
We were a people born into bondage. We were shackled. We were oppressed. But our spirits, our souls, could never, can never be enslaved. Words translated from a Selenite priest, and all part of the essence of yet another Resonance Rewind.
That was a scene in California's Mojave Desert 5 years ago. Our historic first view of the newcomer's ship. Theirs was a slave ship, carrying 250,000 beings bred to adapt and labor in any environment. But they've washed ashore on Earth, with no way to get back to where they came from. And in the last 5 years, the newcomers have become the latest addition to the population of Los Angeles.
So it starts with a police stakeout and then progresses ever onwards, plus a whole range of things which 30 years ago many folks said should be addressed, such as intolerance and anti-social behaviour, anti-racist behaviour, of course. We have the classic lines that were mentioned by the two characters that we have, of course, Eric Sykes and, of course, George Francisco. And George Francisco's line, of course, of... you and your good, clean, fun bigotry makes me just as ill. So lots of things to actually talk about. We spoke, of course, in a recent program to Gary Graham, who portrays Matthew Sykes. Let's find out what Chloe Rose made of her first episode of Alien Nation, of course, The Fountain of Youth.
I absolutely loved it. I mean, I love sci-fi as it is. Anything with aliens, anything that's a little bit out there. That's why I love Stranger Things so much, I think, as well. Yeah, it was great. And it was just interesting to see how the aliens were, like, segregated, you know, because they were seen as different beings. They weren't human, you know, seen as human beings. And it's, you know, it was quite good, really. I think it's quite good that... The director and everything wanted to include, and the writers wanted to include those issues, because that is something that is still happening in society. I mean, it's getting better, but we all need to be, you know, accepted for who we are, whether we're different or not. And I absolutely loved it. I thought that Gary Graham, who played Matthew, was awesome. Was a little bit starstruck as well after talking to him the other day. But he did a fantastic job. I think he was quite funny as that character, actually, in some of the bluntness that he came out with, which I found it was hilarious. But in the hospital, finding out the alien, well, not the alien, the human was on, you know, being seen in the alien hospital. And apparently it was all, oh, no, we don't deal with humans in this hospital. And it was like, well, why? Why don't we? And then when we find out there is an alien in there. Sorry, I'm getting too excited about it. But yeah, it's a really, really great episode. I loved it. It's definitely what I can say.
Interesting. I mean, again, lots of things to discuss and unpick in many ways. And you mentioned a couple of the key things there. Maybe Matthew Sachs's character, of course, this was written by Diane Froloff. It was produced by another friend of the Midweek Drive, Kenneth Johnson, of course, in, I think, top form for this particular area, and directed by John McPherson. Do you feel that Matthew Sachs, in many ways, almost epitomizes the challenge that many folk, and I'll be honest, many white individuals feel about change in society, insofar as he didn't realize that what he kind of considered to be banter was actually quite offensive. Mm-hmm. And yet we see, certainly from his reaction to the horror of his best friend, effectively become the doctor who effectively was operating and removing aliens' organs or the newcomers' organs without their consent, obviously after death, to feed into this whole culture of youth and beauty and so on. Did you feel that actually the fallibility that he shows was something that makes him in some ways a stronger hero?
Yeah, definitely. I do feel that, and I think it's I think it's quite interesting that he'd, I don't know, was sort of shocked by that, because I was kind of a bit like, oh gosh, what is going on here? You know, the fact that they were operating on humans to sort of make them have, was it a span of like 2 weeks? There was something when I was watching it, and it was like where they could live longer, the lifespan was like twice as long. And I was like, through the fact that they were using humans.
The line that they made with the newcomers, or the tanktonese, to use the particular approach, was that they effectively had a longer lifespan, and an average lifespan of about 140 years. Which meant, of course, you had the other way in which the writer was able to address issues relating to ageism, because we see the wife of George Francisco, of course, going for the job, which she's perfectly well qualified for, and things seem to be going so-so for the interview until, of course, she's asked her how old she is, and she says in human years, 68. And then the line comes across, of course, that that's not really approachable. And I thought a very poignant line, which was, what I'm trying to say is, I don't think you'd be happy here. Which was a very polite, almost passive-aggressive way of saying you've been unsuccessful. And it isn't until, of course, she goes back and lies, ultimately, in the final scene of the actual drama. She actually lies about her age and says she's just in her early 30s, that she then gets to show her portfolio. People make that judgment before they even looked at her portfolio. The question was, how old are you? Is that something else we can learn from, even 30 years on from when the series aired?
Yeah, definitely. You know, don't judge a book by its cover sort of thing, no matter what you are. You know, we're all the same at the end of the day. We're all equal, whether we're, you know, LGBT community, whether we're transgender, we're male, we're female, you name it, we're all equal. So I think that's something that we can take from now, even, that can still help us for a future, because we've still got a lot of learning to do, I think.
And
I'd
we
say.
See that.
But
that
we're getting
notion.
There.
We see the notion that, of course, Matthew Sykes's personification. We start off by him looking at himself in the mirror, thinking he's effectively got a grey hair or two showing. So there's that sense of vanity. He then actually takes part in the basketball one-on-one challenge with his partner, George. He injures himself there. They have that discussion in his flat where effectively he says, well, he's 37 and then that's it. It's all over, whammo. And then there's the revelation that actually his partner is twice his age in terms of the balance between human and tanktonesias, etc. And ultimately what we see in terms of the victims or the users of this supposed fountain of youth was the human beings who were very much embedded in what certainly was the case in California in the 1980s, of this fascination with always looking younger, nip and tuck culture, facelifts, and so on and so forth, as opposed to allowing nature to take its course and dealing with the lifestyle, always feeling there's a fix you can actually get into. I mean, again, the lady who eventually is arrested because she knew what was going on and she just didn't admit to it, she says that within 2 years, without her continuing taking the treatment, her age she will look as old as clearly she happens to be. So again, I think a number of other issues that were coming across from that, which given the fragility of life, I think probably bear some sort of consideration. What about favorite characters, Zoe? Chloe, I should say. What about favorite characters, Chloe, in terms of the system? I mean, there are lots of them actually there. I mean, Eric Pierpont, of course, who portrays the character of George Francisco, I think has a very wry sense of humor. And as Gary sort of said to us, he's very much in character throughout. But there were lots of other minor characters that were coming through, such as, of course, Susan Francisco, George's wife. We saw, of course, the wonderful introduction of Uncle Moodry, and Uncle Moodry, who again sort of opens up the thing. And just the slight tease there to really involve you with the original series, the son, Buck, who is clearly guilty of shooting in self-defense, as we, the viewer, were a human. But of course, that is another story that opens and unravels as the series proceeds and how that's obviously dealt with. So where exactly within that range of characters that we actually saw, we could even include Albert here, Albert Einstein, of course, who is the character who was able to actually give the advice on trajectories, but couldn't keep score on the basketball challenge. Which ones stood out to yourself, Chloe, on first watching at least?
I did like George. I thought George was great. The actor who played him was really good. But I think, I don't know if it's just because I spoke to Gary as well, but I did really like his role as Matthew. I think he's an incredible actor because I've seen him in so many things, and this was again such a different character to play. It's not like he's the same type of character in every single one, and I think that's commendable because I think that's the best sort of actors that can be different in each one. So yeah, I'd say Matthew and George from me, definitely.
Yeah, kind of joined them, but obviously Gary Graham clearly, and hopefully we'll come back and speak to us again about his involvement. Yes. Want to focus too much on this for the first time. Well, we've reached the stage there, Chloe, where we need to clearly ask for that number. I mean, we'll find out what the rest of the team are going to make of the Fountain of Youth. What are you going to score it out of 10 for, again, your first experience? And perhaps before we do that, will you be watching more of the series? I mean, it was just 22 episodes at the end. They are all available online. Is it something which you want to find out more about how this whole narrative evolves?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love sci-fi as it is, so I felt like it was really something that I could, you know, get my teeth into, really. Not in an odd way, get my teeth into, but, you know, something that I'd love to enjoy watching. Because obviously, like I said, with Stranger Things, it's anything that's mysterious, Alex, and a bit out there and a bit, you know, ooh, mystical creatures and whatever. I love that, definitely. But yeah, if I was to score it, I think with Gary, it topped it off for me. So shall I push it for a 10, shall I? I'd say about 9.5, let's say. I don't want to be too much, but 9.5 for me, because I'll definitely watch that. It's something that I like.
we've just heard what Chloe Rose makes of the episode of Alien Nation entitled Fountain of Youth, of course, arguably the first episode of season one. We spoke recently to Gary Graham, of course, Matthew Sykes, and hopefully Gary will be returning to the program in the not too distant future. But let's do the summary so you get a little general idea from at least the IMDb descriptor of this particular episode, in which Sykes' issues with aging are intensified when he learns that the newcomer lifespan is almost twice that of humans. The death of a police officer during surgery raises questions about the hospital. Well, you might well say, who's Sykes? Anything in relation to Eric Sykes, of course? No, nor indeed Sykes, the character in Dickens' Oliver Twist. But to address the whole notion of, again, seeing it for the first time and doing the usual Resonance Rewind approach to what she made of it, we're delighted to welcome back to Resonance Rewind, of course, undergraduate for the University of Lincoln, where she's a creative writing and English undergraduate, Kayleigh Mansell. Kayleigh, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. So let's jump straight into the whole essence then. Fountain of Youth, 30 years ago since this first aired, so 1989, long before you were actually born. Any thoughts on the impact it still arguably has in the current climate?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. I love anything with a premise like this where you've got, you know, the intermingling of two species. I think as well, a lot of kind of media about aliens focuses on them in a negative way. So I thought that it was really interesting to have a show that shows, you know, demonstrates and questions what would happen if humans lived happily amongst them. I thought that was such an interesting aspect of it. And again, the whole kind of focus on aging and how far we would go to preserve our youth, you know, I thought, yeah, still quite a prevalent aspect of the current climate, 100%. I really enjoyed it. I thought that if nothing else, if the show continues with premises like that, it'd be something that I'd be interested in watching. I'd never heard of it, to be honest. But I did enjoy having the chance to. I thought it was really well portrayed.
It was a TV series which Kenneth Johnson, another friend of Resonance Rewind and the programme, was asked to develop on the back of a movie which was reasonably successful, starring James Caan, again, carried with it this premise, as developed by Rockne O'Bannon, that the Mojave Desert in California was suddenly joined by a quarter of a million newcomers from a spaceship in which they had, in essence, been enslaved. And clearly this is long before a certain president started talking about putting up a wall or immigration issues or migration issues. But I think it was intriguing that America was selected as the location for this particular event, because clearly America is founded, as we know, the United States of America, on the back of being a melting pot, a mixture of different cultures. And the sense of the Tenctonese, as evidenced by their physical difference, appearance, and so on, from the other inhabitants of the United States, is always very much brought home. Although I think, as you've alluded to, this particular episode really has three key areas working through it. On the one hand, you've got the police procedural, in terms of it starts off, as we said earlier, with the shooting of a Tenctonese police officer. He then goes to hospital. You have that other narrative relating to the search for youth, the tendency to actually ask for a person's age before you ask to see their portfolio. In the case of Susan Francisco, nobody actually wanted to see her portfolio when she was actually seeking work until she effectively lied about her age, which again I thought was interesting. And in many ways also the lies that we see manifested by the beneficiaries of the aging gland, or the renewal gland in essence, that obviously was part of the illegal surgery that had been set up by the doctor the two doctors working, of course, in the medical Trenner clinic, or the medicine Trenner clinic. So did you feel that Diane Froloff, who obviously wrote this episode, did she feel that they nursed in the third, of course, narrative, which we kind of teased at, is, of course, the event of the sun and the character of Buck, who we know, if we'd seen the first episode, had actually shot somebody in self-defense. And again, we see the consequences of that begin to roll out as the series develops. But again, that multi-narrative, did you feel that was quite effectively delivered, or could it have been done better?
I don't know if it's because I haven't watched the first episode, so I wasn't like aware of anything carrying on. So maybe I'm the wrong person to ask. But I thought it did a good job. Maybe it was a little bit implicit in some places, because I mainly focused on, as you said, with Susan being discriminated against, and also the whole reason that the surgery was happening was because of humans illegally wanting to take these parts and benefit themselves and not caring about how the newcomers feel about it. That was pretty much all I focused on, but maybe I just didn't have a too much of a complex like mindset going into it. Maybe I needed more context, but I thought for somebody that had no idea of any context or anything, I thought that those two were quite expertly woven in. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, certainly one of the challenges of the program is we invite people who've never seen it to just jump in. And if it's a series in particular, as opposed to a standalone motion picture, that can be challenging. Yeah. I think this is the beginning of what we see in televisual history of the arc-based storyline, which then reached its continuance in shows like Babylon 5 in the 1990s. Lost, obviously, in the noughties, and continues to be woven very much into the standard storytelling lines that we see in much of the streaming that's on offer today. But I think actually it does work insofar as you don't have to have seen anything beforehand to actually appreciate how the points are actually being made. As we say, it lasted one season, 22 episodes. There were subsequent television motion pictures made that followed through on this. I'm coming back to that notion of how it represented issues relating to racism and bias and other areas. There's one quote that obviously the character of George Francisco, played by Eric Pyrmont, makes quite clear when he's talking to Matthew. I don't like racist jokes. I really don't want to hear this. When Matthew's trying to break up the line about, have you heard the one about the Frenchman, a Russian, and a spongehead who went into the bar? And we never actually find out what the joke is, because that's completely cut across by George. And latterly, later on in the episode, he then at the sort of peak point actually says that he finds the tendency to regard banter, humor, quite offensive, very offensive. I'm paraphrasing what he actually said with that. Now, to me, both of those areas could have been taken quite out of what we would now regard in our contemporary culture as the woke wars, the culture wars, the issues that this is dreadful. Why they say, but does it actually work? And do you feel that actually, because those things are brought to bear, that Sykes, who is clearly somebody who wouldn't see himself as a racist, but maybe if we're talking white privilege, if we're talking areas relating to that, is somehow perceived as being somebody who maybe actually just needs to think before he engages in what for him is just ordinary, everyday banter with a colleague?
It's interesting, I think, because this is an issue that nobody will ever 100% agree on. It's something that could be debated forever and ever, and people would never have a wholehearted agreement on, was this character intentionally racist? Is it, as you said, is it just him being, like, not thinking at all? And yeah, I think in a show like this, but relating as well to racism that happens non-fiction wise, I think the existence of racism in a show that fixates on humans interacting with an entirely different race and then going on to including racist jokes within that, I think personally, I just do think it is a lack of thought. I think that people have different definitions of what racist is and what it means to be racist. And the problem with that is it creates the narrative of a woke culture, because if you don't see implicit signs of racism as encapsulating the horror and like the devastating nature of, you know, physical acts of racism, like wars created by racism, you know, I think that's when it gets hard to define and to tell your personal opinion on it, because like I said, I think people will always disagree. I don't think that, you know, it's hard to say. I think woke culture in its essence will always be perceived as a negative thing. But I think that there's nothing wrong with, as you said, making people think a bit more. And I think if people did take more care into what they thought, this sort of implicit racism and you know, jokes, so to speak, they would hold way more gravity, and they would go alongside what maybe his character will consider to be actual racism. And if he sees himself as harmless, you know, digging into that, well, why? What has brought you to feed racist jokes into everyday conversation? It's such a big, encapsulating and convoluted conversation to have. And I think when you drop it into shows like this, it you know, it's again, like I said, it's interesting because it's a show that could potentially be all about racism, maybe not the racism we know and we experience, if it's interspecies racism with the, you know, the newcomers or whatever. But regardless, I think that it's important to put it onto platforms like this to have a conversation and to get people thinking, is are we too woke, are we not? And again, I don't think we'll ever agree. But yeah.
On a real level, what we're discussing here is science fiction as allegory, science fiction as metaphor, using the parable of the narrative to explain the story. And I think it would be wrong to go away thinking there was no humor in this episode, because there was lots of humor that actually was also featured within that whole process, not only from the interspecies dynamic, but Sykes's neighbor, of course, who's the medical nurse, as she says, "Do you have pain or swelling in your testicles? Would you like me to take a look?" This is, of course, when George has quite honestly revealed the whole thing. A very personal injury, which Sykes is clearly sensitive about. And suddenly it's open discussion. And clearly he's annoyed about that. And we see this, of course, in terms of his character, even in the opening credits, where they have that wonderful moment where he's showed in the police vehicle, sort of shouting and punching the thing, because he's clearly annoyed and angry about something. And he's clearly somebody who does wear his heart on his sleeve. In addition to that, there's also the relationship between Sykes and, I won't say the evil doctor, but the misguided doctor, and the line from that, who in the end, of course, he ends up shooting his childhood friend, because the story effectively says they were friends, and that one of them had actually lobbed a smoke bomb into a staff toilet. And of course, there is that slight sense there that the sense of mortification that Sykes didn't realize that one of his teachers was in there, but of course, his friend did. So there's a sign there that maybe, although you do the deed, you should perhaps have acknowledged that things should have actually been taken onto the fore within that. Let's move on to characters if we can, Kayleigh. Which characters struck you? I mean, what are the lines that they say about that? In addition to something you may have missed, which was obviously where George is informed by Sykes that there's some sour milk in the fridge, because sour milk to the Tenctonese is the equivalent of liquor or alcohol. And again, it's one of those areas that's there. So the more off the milk, the better the quality of the line is. Obviously, they also have two heights, two hearts, I should say. So two hearts, as in terms of the certain Time Lord. But in addition to that, you also have the names of the characters. So George Francisco, his partner Henry James. Of course, the reason they're given these anglicized names is not only playing on how America, in essence, often anglicizes immigrant and migrant names and so on, but also purports to suggest that because there were so many of the newcomers, a quarter of a million of them, as we said, they actually resorted to names of classic heroes or indeed historical characters. Indeed, Albert, who of course can, as we've said, score trajectories but can't actually score basketball. His surname is Einstein, so it's Albert Einstein as well. So there's lots of areas coming through within that in terms of the world building of science fiction. But which characters for yourself stood out? Was it Susan Francisco? Was it Matthew Sykes? Was it George Francisco? Where are you going?
I'm glad you mentioned Susan, because I worried that she wouldn't be a significant character to focus on, but I thought that she I love this when shows make you sympathize for somebody that should be so far away from you, and especially with interspecies shows like this, you find yourself thinking, I should have nothing to do with this fictional character, this newcomer. But when you embark on real life issues such as age old prejudice within the workplace, I felt bad for her. I thought that, and the real solution was not to change how society views aging. It was to lie. It was to change her answer. It was nothing, you know. So in that respect, she stuck out to me only because of what she was representing and kind of the frustration with getting older. And especially, I think she says we're a species of humans that are so used to being obsessed with age. And she was discussing about how frustrating that was for her because she felt so prejudiced and so out of the loop, they wouldn't even check her portfolio, and they only did because she lied about her age at the end. So for that reason, I think that she was the one that stuck out to me the most, maybe just because it worries me that that will happen to me. I think you'd want to hope that no matter what, no matter where you end up, you'll always have a safe place, a comfort within the workplace to do what you love. And clearly she was being disallowed that. So within everything else that was going on, I think that she did a great job in her segments of outlining the issue of aging and how it therefore reflected, you know, the reasons why humans would go as far as to undertake illegal surgery to give themselves that youth that apparently we so desire. And if given another species, we would completely violate them to achieve that. It's such a narrative on us as humans and our vanity and things. So, yeah. So because of that, because of what she represented, I really did like Susan in the episode.
So Susan Francisco, portrayed, of course, by Michelle Scarabelli. And just briefly, I think it's worth mentioning, and I think you addressed that in terms of the age, that the advice that she receives from Uncle Muji, who actually turns up and again does emerge himself, an elder statesman, Mudri, Uncle Mudri, who comes in when she's explaining her problem. And on the one hand, it's very simple. Well, you just lie. You just make it, because he does address the point that it's all relative. And again, the point that's made about it's the equivalent to the way we would relate to canines and dogs and so on, who every human life of 1 year is equivalent to 7 years of a dog's life, etc. And so we have Matthew Sykes making that very interesting observation that so in this relationship with the dogs, i.e. human beings or humanity. Did you also feel as though that it was also an attempt to start addressing cultures, because we see the religious ceremony and the funeral, the Tengtonese funeral for Henry James, and we opened up the sequence with that whole Selenite priest's line that we were a people born into bondage, we were shackled, we were oppressed, but our spirits, our souls can never be enslaved. I know Kenneth Johnson has gone on record and said that one of the things he wanted to develop in the series was to point out that racism isn't one way. Prejudice isn't one way. You can have people of different skin colors being equally as prejudiced and guilty of making those judgments, no matter where on the spectrum you happen to actually be. Mm-hmm. Again, one of the aspects that comes out of the pilots, the enemy within, is that one of the noted bullies of the newcomer's young daughter is in fact somebody who's disabled and is in a wheelchair. And I think there are other areas that come across that. So did you feel that with that, and again necessarily over egging the whole thing, and this is a period again in television history where you are seeing the kind of standard screenplay structure of an A plot and a B plot, and those two things sort of running together, did you feel that was also effectively addressed?
I suppose. I think it's interesting to me, though, that sometimes it takes a show being so literally different culturally, if you see what I mean. It takes them literally being different species to see these explicit differences that I think sometimes us as humans, you know, I think that we take for granted that people are different, and we also kind of reject that people are different, and we I think it's addressed quite literally to show that it shouldn't be have to be so difficult for people to see these separate kind of ideas about life. And I think that it's done in quite a clever way when you read it that way. I think when you, you know, kind of inspect it the way that I did, but I'm not sure if it's...
I mean, there were a couple of moments which I think certainly were clear signals in terms of the issues that this society was faced with. For instance, the party at the doctor's house, where we had a lot of members wearing, proudly displaying their Keep America Pure badges, which clearly, again, addresses the sort of feeling that, without going into any particular party, we almost saw that with the BLM movement and issues related to that and the response to those aspects. And in addition to that, the elements that come through within that whole process. So I think what for me works about this is it does tend to address those issues in a way that can open up a discussion, can open up a debate, which maybe in some instances, if you're using a literal translation, people might feel a little bit too hesitant to step into those particular discourses or range, etc. That might be simply a case of naivety. It may be the legacy of Gene Roddenberry, what he was doing with the original Star Trek and Rod Serling and Twilight Zone and so on. Or it may be something that we can sort of outline. So we've identified your favourite character. Kind of coming to the end now. I mean, I've got to say, I had a bit of an issue. One of the areas that I think was minor point, but I can't imagine even in 1989, or if this is set 5 years afterwards, so 1994, you could have actually got away with being a coroner and actually smoking whilst you're actually having an autopsy. I just thought that was unusual. You know, she seemed she was doing the autopsy and she was having a cigarette. And I thought, I don't know. It just doesn't
Different
quite
time.
Work for me.
Yeah.
I mean, everything else was working really well, and that was a moment where I just thought, I don't know about that. I might have said that. But we've heard what Chloe Rose has provided for it for us. In fact, well, I won't give you a score as yet. The listener knows it, but Kaylee, what's your score for this particular one?
Only because of what I gave Star Trek, which I thought was really good, and I think I gave that an 8 or something. So based on that, perhaps I would give this a 7. It's hard because I feel so sad when I'm critical on these things, because I feel like if I'd have watched them, you know, when I wasn't so plagued by HD and things, I feel like I'd be way less critical. And I hate that about myself. I wish I was less of a snob about it. But I watched it in quite low quality and things. And maybe just all of these aspects, maybe it would feel better if I'd watched it when it came out. But the fact that it's still relevant today, and then it got me thinking about so much, like you said, about Keep America Pure, like, oof, you can, you know, it draws upon so many things that it didn't even realize it would be relevant about now. So because of that, the fact that it's continuing to be relevant, I'd give it a strong 7.
Well, it's always good to know that the legacy of Robin Pierce of curmudgeonliness is still being maintained. I'm going to go for a 9. I felt that there are areas that sort of were very positive. I think it repays repeated viewing. I frequently say that sometimes just watching it as a one-off and just only once, you can miss a couple of the key points. So I think with repeated viewing, watch it now. If it was the first time and only watch, it might be 7.5, 8. Chloe, who had just seen it the once, scored it a 9.5. So there we have it. So it just goes to show. It's marvelous
I'm being
stuff.
Awful.
it's all... Next week, we continue this exploration of the work and times of Kenneth Johnson, because we're actually into a somewhat expanded series, which is available, I think, on most platforms. I'm sure people will remember it fondly. They might remember the remake, which sadly didn't quite manage to be as successful as something that launched in the summer of 1984 as a mini series. And of course, it's the tale of V, where the visitors, another alien people, who possibly have less fondness for humanity than the Tanktonese, effectively emerge. And I would also say that in terms of the resonation of this, it's very difficult not to take a look at the arrival of the spaceships in V, and not sort of say, ah, oh, that's where Roland Emmerich got his inspiration for as far as Independence Day is concerned. However, other than that, Kenneth Johnston frequently has said that this is very much based on the tale of the French resistance against intolerance, against occupation, against fascism, and so on. And that's next up as far as Resonance Rewind is concerned, when we will actually work out indeed how visitors might relate to us and how another alternative vision of the future, as possibly put forward by the writer Arthur C. Clarke in Childhood's End and Rendezvous with Rama, might also open up a whole range of things. For the moment, though, Kaylee Mansell and, of course, Chloe Rose, and we'll hear, I think, another airing of Chloe's single, which is released today, this very day. And that's Golden Sun. So that's coming up in a few moments. But we'll leave you with those immortal words. Keep on resonating. Okay, we've heard what Chloe Rose thinks of Fountain of Youth, the first episode in the televisual series of 1989, which is Alien Nation. We've heard what Kaylee Mansell thinks of it. I've also given my score, but we haven't heard from Kathy Manso. So, Kathy, from the Keep America Pure campaign, no, only kidding there. It was a fictional badge that we saw in the series. What are your thoughts on this? And is this the first time you've encountered Kenneth Johnson's Alien Nation?
This is the first time I've encountered Kenneth Johnson's Alienation. I was into it. I was really, I mean, I really wasn't sure what to expect. I know I've heard about it. I kind of understood the gist of it, so it wasn't too new to me. but I've never actually watched a whole episode, and I have questions. But overall, I was intrigued. I like that they kind of made this a fun detective between two species situation, and with likes and dislikes and trying to overcome. And the episode was interesting. I was looking for the next episode, to be honest, because I was like, you can't leave me there.
And the series does develop. It's not so much a series arc, and I think it could easily have gone into further series. But again, the ratings situation, as we found last week with Firefly, did impact. There were a couple of TV movies that were also made, which Ken Johnson also was responsible for. We looked at a number of key things with both of our contributors. What for your good self stood out, Kathy, as high spots? Was it the question about the obsession with youth, the fact that obviously California, if any place was a cliched representative of this search for never-ending youth and longevity and so on, that was very much there. Was it the ethical questions in terms of the betrayal of their own species of the Tanktonese doctor? Was it, again, the subsumed, as we referred to it, racist banter that certainly Matthew Sykes is corrected on several times? And even though we can sympathize with his character, we tend to suggest that maybe, again, George Francisco has a point in terms of he doesn't find such supposed banter amusing. But what areas struck with you? Or indeed, as Kaylee said, is it simply a case of a lot of identification with the ageism as portrayed by the character of Susan Francisco, who only actually gets her portfolio looked at when she lies about her age?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, they're all really relevant. I think ageism really stuck out most for me. Although as a close second, the racist banter, you know, that was really high up there for me too. Even though we're talking about alien species, you're still comparing a lot of things that are still being compared to today. What are racist remarks and stereotypes and generalizations? And I think it's always a relevant and important discussion because it's something we are constantly evolving from. The example of like, we're not supposed to say homeless anymore. We're supposed to say houseless, which may seem really minor and may seem like nitpicking, but there is a difference between a home and a house. And they can have a lot of different reasonings behind them, not to what people assume is the stereotype, right? Like if someone is houseless, they assume they're lazy or not willing to put in the work, when we now know with plenty of evidence and study that that's not always the case. The racism really did take, it was a huge part of it. Also just the relationship of people from different backgrounds and how half of them can get along and the other half can't seem to get along either. Which, again, pretty relevant to today's world. The ageism thing, though, that took me by surprise, especially since she doesn't look it, because we go by looks very much when we talk about ageism, which is why, like, at the end, that person can completely accept her age because she looked it. You know, I think I get away with a lot of ages. I could be whatever age I want, really, if it's somewhere between the frame of, like, 23 to 35.
But presumably, Kathy, you don't use laryngeal tracheotomies from an alien species to maintain your youthful looks, or at least you haven't admitted to that.
I mean, I never will, but thankfully, I just have really good genes, so I'm told. We'll see. We're still young here. It could go terribly wrong later. But you're right. I don't face the same kind of problems other people face when it comes to what, like the background behind that. And I guess I will only really know once there gets to be a certain time. I mean, this kind of discussion is up for debate right now in my own country when it comes to how old is too old to hold a role of power in my country when it comes to justices and presidencies. And should we be picking people, even though the storyline goes, oh, they have the experience, which a lot of the times they do, but also do they have the evolution that comes with the world we're living in today? And that balance is really tricky. And I mean, I'm not saying hire a 30-year-old to run the White House either, but I don't think it's unreasonable for someone to be 50 either.
In terms of the lines that's actually used, I mean, clearly the writer, again, following the footsteps of Kenneth Johnson, Diana Frolov, does refer to the aliens as being at various times sponge heads, slags. You know, clearly this is channeling the N-word and using that perspective. And as Kennedy Johnson has also stated, this is one way in which the newcomers, because they are alien, suddenly are faced with a lot of prejudice from almost a united human front. Does that also give us the lens through which we can explore our own particular concerns? Because one of the discussions we had with Kaylee was very much addressing this notion of the culture wars and issues that in many ways are quite explicitly addressed in this show, which is now over 30 years old, which if they were addressed today, you'd say that's really cutting edge drama. But again, it's using science fiction as an allegory, as a metaphor, to at least get people to think about, well, even though Matthew Sykes is the hero, he still has feet of clay. He still actually has situations where, you know, he acknowledges, even to the extent of obviously realizing that, you know, his banter isn't appropriate.
Well, and I think this is also a really good reflection on understanding privilege, you know, especially when we started having these discussions. I mean, some of us have been having these discussions for a very long time, but in the most recent years, when it comes to especially Black Lives Matter, we've been talking about this phrase, white privilege. And, you know, it was quite controversial. I think it's becoming more accepted once it's been defined a little bit better. But privilege is a huge aspect, and it's not a negative or positive. It's just something that needs to be accepted or seen, or, you know, or acknowledged at the very least. And I think that's something that really is displayed here. But, you know, it is a privilege to get away with saying words and not getting beat up, right? It's also a privilege to be able to say something and know that no one has a retort back. Also, this is another reflection on, I mean, I don't know if I could say systematic racism, but systematic something.
Possibly institutional. Perhaps institutional would be the best term to use.
Yeah, I think that's the right way.
One of the things we haven't discussed as yet was the ending of the piece, in which it's Matthew Sykes who effectively goes against George Francisco's advice, and he actually burns all the files. Now, clearly, again, it's of its time. You burn the files, you should obviously destroy the computer hard drives as well. But his rationale for burning the files is very much on the basis of this is wrong. This whole essence of what could well have been seen as a fascinating insight in terms of tectonese physiology and how it can be adapted and organs can be harvested and used for the benefit of the dominant ideology of the human spirit species, etc. He quite clearly thinks it should be completely destroyed and almost purified via fire, whereas George Francisco, possibly, although he doesn't prevent the burning of the files, he kind of adopts the other policy. And of course, we see that reflection on any scientific discovery can be used for good or evil, as we go back to the splitting of the atom and so on. Did you feel that was well handled, or was it a case of that was just another step too far? That was as bad as I said, my own gripe for this particular episode, which was the coroner who lights up and has a cigarette while she's actually doing an autopsy. I just don't think that would happen even in 1989 or 1994.
I mean, that is probably why the coroner is my favorite character, because it does that. But to go back to that, it's a hard call, because I felt pretty conflicted. Documentation is really important when, I mean, if we're going to talk about this as a, if it's inhumane or in human rights situation, you would want this to be documented so it wouldn't happen again. But with that challenge, it's also providing the blueprint of making it happen again as well. And so you're kind of stuck in between these two choices of, yes, if I get rid of it, no one has access to coming up with an idea like that. But, you know, there, just because it doesn't happen then doesn't mean it doesn't have the potential to happen again. And I think that's like the stronger situation here. I would try to never let this happen again is kind of the goal. I mean, if it's that evil, it should be prevented. And it's not a great thing that they were able to get away with it to a certain point, but it was pretty preventable in the smaller scale, instead of it being years upon years upon years of this happening and it going unnoticed or unjust. So I think I'm more on the side that it should have been kept, it should have been documented, it should have been exposed. So that way, granted, you have two options when that happens to the public. The public can either decide how awful, how horrific, we can never let this happen again, or it can inspire and being like, well, why do we see that as the same as us? Is that, I mean, and that's how you cause more division too.
So you've identified your favorite character. We've done that. The coroner, which is fine. Interesting left field choice there. Susan Francisco has received a nomination from Kaylee, and Chloe was very keen, obviously committed to Gary Graham, to Matthew Sykes's character, who ultimately I'd probably sort of go along with as well. Although I'd also put in a special mention for Uncle Muji, who I think again shows a certain experience with age and wisdom and sagacity of age that comes through in terms of, at least he advises Susan simply to acknowledge that time is relative and simply lie about her age so she will have her portfolio looked at. And that's the way it goes. What about a final score out of 10? What are you going to go for, Kathy?
That's a good question. I've been thinking about this, and I think I'm going to give it a 7.5. I feel good about a 7.5.
Just ahead of the curmudgeonly 7 of Kaylee Mansell, but still behind my own 9 and indeed Chloe Rose's 9.5. But then again, go and see it yourself, watch the whole process. And as we said earlier, next up, it'll be another Kenneth Johnson exploration of inhumanity and dealing with alien species, of course. That'll be V.